And good afternoon, Tri-States, and welcome to this edition of your radio magazine, Voices of the Tri-States. Today we are talking federal issues, and joining me by phone I have Iowa Senator Charles Grassley. And Senator, good afternoon. How are you today?
Very good. How are you?
Well, you know, the sun is out, Senator, and it's not too hot yet, so I guess it's not too bad. And plus, it is Iowa. It is just about officially summer, so we should expect a little heat coming on.
Yes. Iowans are fortunate and that they don't have the humidity every day like we do in Washington, D.C., and that's why I enjoy getting home every weekend to have a little more moderate temperature and particularly humidity.
I agree with you, Senator. Having been able to go back and forth between here and Washington, it's a different kind of humidity. It's kind of it's a heavy humidity. But Washington itself, I think, if I recall right, was built on a swamp or swampy land. Is that right?
That's right. We may, the Capitol itself may be on a hill, but the country or the area as a whole was very swampy.
Okay. Well, Senator, I want to jump into some questions here. Very serious, of course, over the weekend, the shooting at an Orlando night spot. Questions out there, was this a terrorist act? Was this someone acting on his own? I don't know if you have been briefed yet or some information coming your way of what folks are saying.
Not briefed yet. I assume that on Tuesday or Wednesday we will have a briefing. I think that there's we don't have votes today. I'm in Washington, D.C. because I was planning on a 5:30 vote, but we're not going to have votes until tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock, so I suppose some people are still coming back. So I'd say tomorrow or Wednesday we will have such a briefing, although it hasn't been announced yet. And I think we ought to start with the proposition that Iowans have a constitutional right to be protected as much as they can be. You can't guarantee a risk-free society, but the federal government, particularly when it comes to international involvement and the extent to which this was radical Islam, that would put an international flavor on it, even if we, and I don't know yet if whether it was directed from outside the country, but the federal government has a responsibility, and my responsibility representing Iowans is to make sure that Iowans are protected as much as possible. So first of all, our hearts would and prayers would go out to the victims of this tremendous mass murder, and then we got to follow up with investigations and let the FBI and the police do their work. Any other government agencies that are involved to do their work and wait until the facts get out. But right now it looks like, at least from a personal point of view, without assigning it to directly to an international organization, that he had the same words to say before he committed these murders that a lot of other radical Islamists have had.
Senator, apparently he had been looked at by the FBI a couple of times, and I've heard other news reports saying, well, why wasn't he in jail? But in the sense that if a person hasn't committed a crime, there's really not too much you can do.
No, as long as they're legally in the United States, whether they're a citizen or not, they're protected by the American Constitution. And probably even if they were illegally in the United States, there might be some constitutional protections that they enjoy. So we don't know, and I think we just have to wait until the investigations are over. I haven't had an opportunity to listen to the news conferences this morning, but I'll pay attention to them and read up on them, and I'm not sure what was said in those, whether there's anything definitive, and I don't think there was too much definitive. There's still a lot of questions being asked, and we ought to give the FBI and the local police an opportunity to do the proper investigation so that the statements we make are based upon fact.
Exactly, Senator. And you're right. I have not seen anything that says definitive at this point of whether this was an organized situation or just someone acting on his own. And like I say, the statements coming up that he'd been watched, but I'm not sure exactly what that really means of, okay, is this somebody who just was suspicious, or were there some definite activities out there? And, of course, the calling for, well, what about gun control on automatic weapons? I'm not sure why, you know, that always gets brought into these kinds of discussions at this point.
Well, I think that gets brought into the discussions because the people that want to discuss that are weak on a lot of other points. I believe, here again, Iowans have to realize that there's people around this world connected with radical Islam, want to kill Iowans, want to kill Americans. They just don't like our way of living, our society. And to talk about guns, the only way you can attack this, you got to realize that there's an ideology involved. They don't like Americans, and they're going to do whatever they can to attack America. And yesterday's at least from the individual's point of view, was one way of doing it.
Want to change gears a little bit here, Senator. There's an act, the Benefits Improvement Act, which was something that you'd gotten out of and approved in the Senate Judiciary Committee, along with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, to reduce backlog of families awaiting approval for survivor benefits of public safety officers who are actually killed in the line of duty. Senator, you want to explain a little bit about what this is? And I guess I didn't realize there was a big backlog on those either.
Yeah. I think the law was passed in 1976. It gives to EMS and policemen, I suppose policemen for the most part, or sheriffs, et cetera, people that are in law enforcement or EMS and what other groups it applies to. But mostly we talk about it being police benefit help for people that die in regard to protecting the American people, in other words, just doing their jobs. We don't change the benefits at all, but I'll tell you, there's such a backlog. The rules of the department say they ought to make a decision in a year. There's 58% of 700 and some cases where they're way over a year late in making a decision. We had a recent case involving a Northwood, Iowa woman killed when a helicopter crashed as they were taking people emergency to a hospital. And that gentleman came and testified that after 3 years, he had not made gotten a decision on his wife's death. And the monetary benefits that come from it weren't there. He testified 3 days later, he got word that he had been approved for the benefits of the 1976 law. So coming from a couple other examples like that, you come to the conclusion that when the heat is on the department, they make a decision. So this bill simply sets up a system where there has to be a weekly update on the Justice Department's website of how the process is coming along. Because when public knowledge is out there of how slow they're working, they tend to speed up, so they have to report weekly. So you can look and see how your case is coming for your loved one that was killed in line of duty. And we hope to speed it up. It's a bipartisan bill sponsored by Senator Gillibrand of New York and me, and it got out of committee unanimously the other day. And we're not asking for everything to get approved, but quite simply, families deserve an answer, and they shouldn't have to wait longer than a year to get an answer.
Senator, do we know why this occurred? Was it just people not doing their job, or were they overworked, or have we gotten any answers on that?
No, and I don't think we need any answers, but I think the fact that this sheriff in Northwood County got word about his wife 3 days after he appeared, that somebody's just lackadaisical in pursuing it. Another example would be when we had an attorney general by the name of Ashcroft. and it was taking a long time. And he issued an edict that it needed to be done faster. And all of a sudden, the process was speeded up. But maybe a year or two later, they fell further behind. And now they're behind on 58% of the cases not being done in a year. So this means that 400 and some families out of 700 and some are not are just in
kind of a limbo.
Yeah, that's the word I was trying to think of.
Yep.
You can read my mind, can't
yep.
you?
I think I can sometimes, Senator. Well, you know, the thing of it is I see these things, and you see them every day as well, and I can't imagine the frustration that folks feel with, and in fact, maybe some folks had never dealt with the federal government in any kind of a serious way before something like this happens, and you imagine that things will go through a due process, and as you mentioned, the one gentleman, 3 years, and then he says something, and 3 days later, he gets his benefits. It just is boggling my mind that these kinds of things yeah. continue to happen, and it seems to be just business as usual.
Well, Iowans that have these cases pending, they deserve answers, just like people living in the other 49 states. And this is one time I'm able to help a few Iowans as well as able to help people in the other 49 states.
All righty. Senator, I want to talk a little bit about health care reform. Anything new on that front on the health situation on that reform bill?
I've got several bills dealing with health care, but if you're talking about Obamacare generally,
right.
the only news that we're having, and we don't have final news on it, and the final word has to be made public by November the 1st, is what's going to look like a double-digit and some places extremely high increases in premiums for people. And that's going to come out just before the election. There's some talk that this administration's going to have it come out on December the 1st instead of November the 1st, so it doesn't impact the election of Hillary Clinton. And that's the biggest issue we have before us. Now, Obamacare... still at my town meetings around Iowa, these high increase in premiums are complained about. Sometimes the inability to get insurance or a lot of red tape or not getting answers. Obamacare comes up quite a bit at my Iowa town meetings.
And again, Senator, I want to remind our audience here, we are talking with Iowa Senator Charles Grassley. Talking federal issues, of course, and if you do have a question for the senator, give us a call here at 690-1370. Senator, you mentioned you have several health care bills that are out there. Any that come to mind or something that's going to be coming front and center fairly
yeah.
quickly? Or?
Well, the hospitals in Dubuque are pretty big, so this wouldn't apply to the hospitals in Dubuque. And it also comes from the standpoint of we have some rural hospitals in Iowa that are not, I don't think they're in extreme trouble, but we have had nationwide in the last 5 years about 55 rural hospitals close, and we expect about the same number in the next 5 to 10 years. So there's going to be increasing pressure on hospitals that have low population. So I have a bill in that's entirely voluntary, so no hospital has to do this. But because hospital occupancy in a lot of critical access hospitals, and those are the hospitals that are reimbursed at 100% of cost, but usually the occupancy rate is about 4%, and it's pretty difficult to operate a hospital when only 4% of the beds are occupied. So this legislation that I introduced that I hope to get passed before December 31st would allow that hospital to give up their residency beds, do other things that hospitals do, particularly to keep emergency rooms open, so that you keep healthcare facilities closely available in rural areas. They can continue to operate without having the beds, under a special program we'd set up under Medicare that would allow them to keep health care facilities within the small towns of rural America. And that may not be a decision that Iowa hospitals right now would make, but I would imagine some places in the country, out of the 50 states, that some hospitals might be making that decision right now. And I'll bet of the 55 rural hospitals that closed down, if this has been available for them, some of them may have stayed open.
Well, and some of that directly then impacting, of course, the future. I'll just say Iowa here for economics and things like that. If you don't have a hospital or medical care in your community, it's pretty tough to try to attract industry and those newer, you know, higher paying jobs to an area if you don't have health care.
Yeah, and for sure, hospitals tend to be some of the biggest employers in rural America.
All righty. Senator, speaking health care, Zika virus, of course, hitting the scene here. I know there had been a proposal for some funding for research right out of the chute here. What's going on with that?
I don't know that we have a particular problem in Iowa. I may have read where there was an Iowan or two affected by it, and I don't know whether those people, because the main concern isn't just getting the illness that comes with the Zika virus, but also how it impacts the pregnancy. And we have done this, and it'll be in conference now between the House and Senate. In fact, we voted to go to conference last week on this very subject. We put in $1.1 billion into it, plus about $600 or $700 million that's transferred from the Ebola fund, so that there's about $1.9 billion that the administration thought that they might use to counteract the problems that are created by the Zika virus. I voted for that bill, and it passed pretty overwhelmingly, and it's in conference now. And the conference will be the difference between $600 or $700 million that the House appropriated versus the $1.1 billion that the Senate appropriated. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if it would come out at the Senate level of $1.1 billion.
Senator, speaking of funding for research, I did see Alzheimer's disease. There was a proposal out there. I believe it was an additional $400 million for research for that, passed out of a subcommittee. Have you heard anything from folks around Capitol Hill on that? I know the Alzheimer's folks had been out there in April kind of pushing for this, since it is the most expensive disease in America now. Any thoughts on that, of what the fate of that might be?
I think that when we get the bill up that has that appropriation in it, that it will, as long as the subcommittee has recommended that figure, that it will hold on the Senate floor.
Okay, so we'll kind of stay tuned on that one as well. Senator, I know the last time we were on the show here, we were talking about the Military Justice Improvement Act, improves the system for handling sexual assaults, of course, within the military. Where is that bill standing now?
Well, this week we were on, and last week too, we were on the defense reauthorization bill that comes up every year. And the Gillibrand-Grassley Amendment would be amended to that. But here's what I can't tell you, and it's kind of a technical parliamentary issue. I don't know whether, now that we had 60 votes to get to finality on the defense bill, what you call non-germane amendments can't be offered in the Senate bill afterwards. I think Senator Gillibrand and I will still try to get it offered, but if it's ruled non-germane by the parliamentarian, we will not be able to get that bill up. But it's a badly needed bill. Now, this isn't something that I've heard so much directly from Iowans as I have from the nation as a whole, but I joined Gillibrand because we were promised a year ago that certain things that we put in the defense authorization bill would take care of the sexual assault situations within the military. But we've had too many instances where generals at the top of the chain of command have stepped in and protect people that shouldn't be protected because they were probably rapists. And the other thing is that a lot of times the person that reports the rape, and in most instances that's a female, then at that point sometimes they're retaliated against. So there's reason for a lot of people that have gone through this sexual assault not to report it. Now, to me, a crime is a crime, and rape is a crime, and people ought to be punished for this crime. But sometimes the way it's handled now, through the chain of command, they're not punished. So what the Gillibrand-Grassley bill would do would move it out of the chain of command into a separate process within the four militaries, where there'd be a prosecution that the chain of command could not interfere with. In other words, justice would be done, and hopefully whistleblowers would be protected, and hopefully more sexual assaults would be reported, and more rapists would be convicted.
And it just brings up the kind of the whole issue on the VA when we got a new secretary in there, Senator. Any thoughts on the position? Are we, you know, that's one of the issues, the backlog of the health care, a lot of VA things. Are we seeing some changes happening?
No, just the opposite. You had the Justice Department step in last week and say that people that were fired under certain new provisions of law could still have another bite at the apple through the courts. And making it easier to fire is not a reality. And it's something that Congress particularly stepped up, maybe not with the low-level employees, but with the higher-level employees. But the most disappointing thing is, and I say this because you know how I've been protecting whistleblowers and how I try to ride herd on various bureaucracies, whether Republican or Democrat. And particularly in Iowa, we don't have so much complaints about the VA system, at least not like they have was exposed 2 years ago. But bottom line of it is that the secretary, before he was secretary and he wanted my vote, came to my office, and I told him about the necessity of listening to whistleblowers, and he said he understood completely. But quite frankly, the bottom line is, 2 years later, nothing has changed.
I'll tell you, it is interesting. The more things change, sometimes the more they stay the same on those situations. And we'll keep hoping for you here, Senator, and keep fighting the good fight. Just thought I'd toss this one in. Senator, now you know who you will be facing in the fall for a challenger for the Senate seat, Patty Judge. Any thoughts on the election?
Well, yeah, my thoughts are what I've always done in several elections, that the best way to get reelected or to get a higher office is do the very best job where you are. So I'm going to be continuing to do the things that I do when Senate is session, not miss a vote in the last 22 years, to keep up that so people know I'm on the job. When we aren't in session, I'm going to be home with holding my town meetings, as I do in every county every year, to keep in touch, because if you don't keep in touch, you can't represent the people of Iowa in the United States Senate. When I'm going to doing the job I'm doing, which I, again, will repeat, is the best way to get reelected, to continue to hold government accountable through my oversight work, to legislate in a bipartisan, effective way, like I have shown out of the Senate Judiciary Committee. About 28, 29, 30 bills have been reported out of committee, and they've all been bipartisan bills, and 16 or 17 have passed the Senate, and 9 have been signed by the President, and to continue to do what Georgetown University study released about 6 weeks ago suggested, after studying 100 senators, I come in the top 5 of being the most bipartisan. And then to give the people of Iowa a voice by keeping in touch with them, which kind of gets back to what I said about holding town meetings. Communication and knowing what's on Iowans' minds is an absolute necessity if you're going to represent the people of your constituency.
All righty, Senator. Well, as always, our time goes quickly, but I appreciate your joining us and fighting for us here in Iowa. Thank you, Senator.
Yeah, thank you very much. Goodbye.